because I've got Leonard's last letter to them, which he had hoped would heal a rift between him and that church that he had founded in Corinth. I really like the epistles because I feel as though they're really accessible for me. After all, they were written to a whole group of totally different people, some of whom were probably middle-aged women, like me, who were trying to do their best to follow Christ's teachings while contending with the world and the demands of that world around them. I also imagine that perhaps there were some stubborn folk who were sure that they knew better than the rest of them just how to live out this new Christian life. And I'm absolutely sure there were some young folks who wanted to do it their way and make their stamp on this new Christianity thing. But the wonderful thing would have been that they all cared enough to try and live out the gospel as they envisioned it should be done. So I see it as no surprise that Paul is often having to offer some guidance and leadership to this fledgling community, filled with different needs and different perspectives, but bound by that same desire to fulfill God's commandments, to love one another, and to love God with all your heart. I have no idea how many letters Paul would feel compelled to write to us today when you see the myriad of different Christianities. Paul writes that the love of Christ compels us, it urges us on. And I think that that is the most uniting factor about us Christians. And that it's the tangible love that Christ was able to show us here on earth that moves us forward, that keeps us working towards better relationships with one another and with our God. How we actually do that is where we differ. Sometimes the differentiation is cause for celebration, like today. Sometimes it's a source of division. And that's what makes it so important that we never forget that all of us Christians start with the love of Christ and a desire to follow the path that he has shown us. When Paul speaks of that compulsion, I find that language really strong. It's meant to remind us that once we do decide to live a Christian life, a life which follows his path, we will be unable to go back to that old life. That's a message that I see in this epistle reading. It lives in lines like this: and he died for all, so that those who live might no longer live for themselves. And there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. See, everything has become new. Paul experienced a real life-changing encounter with God's grace, which drastically changed his outlook. It changed him from being the great Paul, the zealot of the church, who was out persecuting to the best of his ability those Christians. It was what he could do for his church. It was about Paul. And about Saul, actually, back then. He believed that all that persecution was doing God's will and was strengthening his church. But during his father's conversion on that road to Damascus, the vision of the resurrected Christ asks him, "Why do you persecute me?" He is blinded and is led away. Another follower of Jesus, Aeneas, he receives a vision to heal Paul, give him back his sight. And then Paul begins to change from being I-focused to we-focused. He says also in his letter that this love urges us. Christ's love urges us because we are convinced that one died for all. Change in attitude for Paul was very dramatic, and I think it necessitated a spectacular intervention on God's part of Jesus. Only something of that magnitude could have changed Paul and moved him from a self-appointed defender of the faith to a conduit, an ambassador, allowing God to make an appeal through him. Last Wednesday, I was listening to Metro Morning. CBC program, first thing in the morning, I listen to it every day as I get ready for work. And they interviewed a young woman named Margaret Harvey. In 2012, she was out riding her bike to work in Toronto, and a garbage truck overtook her. It cut her off, and the back wheels of the garbage truck rolled right over her. She was extremely injured. Her pelvis was crushed. Her handlebars had punctured her leg. She expected a 30% expectation of survival. As she was holding on to a little thread of consciousness, her first thoughts were to let her bosses know she wasn't going to be able to make it to work today. Also, let her husband know she wasn't going to be able to pick up the kids from school. Margaret has since recovered, and she changed jobs. And she now spearheads a program called My Best, which stands for Beyond Surviving to Thriving. And it's a peer support group at St. Michael's Hospital, which is where she recovered. And she shared this insight. The course of my life changed forever that day. And I've reached a point now where if I could go back and change it, I wouldn't. Because my life is good. There's a lot of good things that happened from that day. I learned a lot. One of the nurses she now works with says, Margaret is a unique individual. Having sustained significant injuries, it would have been understandable if she had spent all of her energy on a recovery. But instead, she is focused on looking for ways to provide other trauma survivors with support. It is really difficult in our world to ignore all the messages that say we need to think about ourselves. Many of them sound positive, like self-aware and self-assured. But many of them, some of the ones that society seems to value so much, actually serve to separate us from each other. Words like, and attitudes like, self-sufficient, which means, I don't need to. I'm okay on my own. Or self-made, which implies that I did all of this on my own, without any help from anybody. And what about self-righteous and self-serving and self-proclaimed? It's as if Paul could see the me decade, or I think millennia, coming when he wrote this letter. As a student minister, at the age of 50, I surely didn't realize that I was hearing a call from God. In fact, I was too busy being self-sufficient to realize that I needed a community, and that there just might be a community that needed me too. I was too wrapped up in corporate Canada and my job to realize I was working on all the wrong things, just like Paul. I was busy honing my resume and learning skills I could put to good use and make the companies I worked for more profitable and hire more people. Now, I'm not knocking capitalism by any stretch, just the fact that my focus was so skewed, I couldn't see that the measures of my success were intertwined with the success of the company. A drastic change in perspective was needed to get me focused on the world outside of me. I had to learn to live in community, where skills like compassion and kindness and listening are way more important than skills in presentation, PowerPoint, finance, and bottom lines. I had to learn the value of those people around me and allow myself to depend on them while supporting my neighbors. For Paul and Margaret Harvey, this came about through catastrophic accidents. I like to think God nudges us, but then patiently nudges us again. But some things take a little longer and perhaps a heftier course. But it doesn't have to be that way. We can hear the calls through scriptures like these. And we can see God's call for us in this world. I'm always encouraged by the story, I'm sure you know it, of the two young men from Thorn Reliance Railroad. At the age of 12, Craig Kielberger saw a headline in the Toronto Star newspaper that read, Battered Child Labored Boy 12 Murdered. The story was about a young Pakistani boy named Iqbal Masih who was forced into labor and bondage at a carpet factory at age 4. He He became an international figurehead for the fight against child labor and was murdered at the age of 12. Now, Craig Gilbert's perspective was probably always pretty sound, especially when he was reading these newspaper headlines at the age of 12. But this was the turning point that led him and his brother to a lifetime of activism and philanthropy, beginning with the group of preteens that formed Kids Can Free the Children. It's now Free the Children, and it is a huge international philanthropical organization. It also spawned the formation of an enterprise called Me Too, dedicated to helping children everywhere become socially aware, socially conscious, and to lead lives of service to others. I'm in awe of these young men who are still young by my reckoning, but who saw God's message in a headline at the age of 12. It gives me hope because it reminds me that if I'm intentionally aware, I can see and hear God's messages everywhere. I can heed those little reminders that take me out of concern for myself and back into concern for others. Our society doesn't promote this. We're told to be concerned about what we're wearing and doing and driving, and compare that to our friends and our neighbors, even our enemies. So often, we only know how well we're doing if we compare ourselves to somebody else. I know I make a good living in comparison to this person. But you know, Jane over there, she's got the same job, and well, she goes on a lot of vacations to Disneyland. One of the great prayers I used to love, and I still use a lot, is the prayer of St. Francis, where it prays to understand rather than to be understood. To love rather than to be loved. And to console rather than to be consoled. You see, I can't make you understand me, but I can sure try and understand you. I know I can't make you love me, but I can certainly love you. I have the choice today to think of myself first or think of others first. Paul reminds us that the love of Christ compels us to live for him who died and was raised, and we do this by living and caring for one another in community. Paul pulls us all together with words of reconciliation. He reminds us that we're all in this life together, and that God reconciled us to him through Christ. And we now have this ministry of reconciliation. He tells us we are ambassadors for Christ because God is making his appeal through us. Sometimes it can be discouraging. In recent days, I, as I'm sure many of you, have heard that old Sinatra classic, My Way, being appropriated for political purposes. Putting all politics aside, it just seems a misguided choice for anthem. The line, I did it my way, just seems so self-aggrandizing and self-promoting. But then I realize that the song begins with, and now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. I think if I were to appropriate this song, I would like it to read, we did it God's way. That's often the question I always ask myself, am I doing this my way or God's way? Which asks the next question, does it benefit me or all of us? Because what's good for community will always be what's good for parents. So this morning, on this final day of our week of prayer for Christian unity, I urge you to be ambassadors for Christ, to let God use you to reconcile all of us, one to another, to grow as a community, to reach out to others in support, in solidarity, in love, kindness, and compassion. Do not be discouraged.